SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and I thought I was going to be late getting back, but I was—I managed to slip it in. Is there anything worse when you're in a pinch? You go to the Keurig. You go to the Keurig, and you push the button, and it makes all its goofy noises, and then you realize, where's the coffee? And sure enough, there's not enough water. You know, the water has run out of the chamber. So now you got to go fill take the lid off, you put the fill the chamber, put the thing back in. And invariably, it's when I'm in a pinch here. So I thought I was going to be late, but I didn't. I got back in time. Coming back, and we'll wait just a second here for Nick Tamaro and joining us. With a little bit of recapping, but I'm sure that Nick did not expect to hear from people that were letting him know how yesterday his career as a race caller at Maynard Downs was the topic of conversation on national radio. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Very good. We were, I don't even know, I forget even how we ended up getting to your days calling Maynard, but that came up yesterday with Pat.
Well, you know what? If all the vast wreckage of my past is brought up on national radio, if the only thing that comes up is me calling races at Maynard, then I think I'll take it. But no, that was fun. Back in March of 2010, Pat was at the Dubai World Cup, and so I trucked up to Maynard and called a couple days. And really fun place. It was only on track betting at that point, but you know that. They did about 120,000 to 130,000 in on-track handle, just with probably, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people there. So the quarter horse races especially were really well received, and it was a fun environment. That's a place that's played host to a lot of concerts over the years. I know Willie Nelson played there a lot. I think the Grateful Dead played there quite a few times. So it's a shame that it is not operational as a racetrack anymore, but I do know that Sam Houston bought the rights to the dates in the Austin area. So if it's ever to happen again, there's at least a chance.
Well, the I guess the Maynard topic came up. It came up because Steve Asmussen's 8,000th win, and I saw his son Keith had put up pictures from his first win, and I saw the OR Downs, and I realized right away that his first win came at Maynard, and I guess that's what that was the reference point.
Oh, how funny!
Yeah.
You know, I guess cool. Asmussen probably got his first win after Trinity Meadows was out of existence, because that would have probably been he probably got his first win in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, because racing down here started at Trinity Meadows in 91 and went until 97. That was the only, well, and of course Sam Houston started in 94, but that was, I don't think he was training at that point. So yeah, Maynard Downs, wow, that's something you would have been very hard pressed to use that trivia question and have somebody get it right.
It's pretty cool. Well, we were together obviously a week ago at this time, and we looked through the weekend. Let's get your take from Derby, and then we'll work back. What was your final decisions and plays? And of course, you were involved. I was watching you, and it seems like a lot of work, Nick, to end up a couple of $100 down from the 12,000.
It was a lot of work, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't the case where you say, oh, I broke even, I could use the money. But it was a little bit more work than that. But no, it was a tremendously fun time, and obviously the weather notwithstanding, it was a great Derby day, and you know, without question, all admiration and appreciation for the winner. He ran a sensational race, being close to that very hot pace and being able to withstand all challengers. And you know, I had the same reaction as Travis when we were watching the replay, we saw, I think we saw on somebody's social media, a shot from the new Starting Gate Suites. And what you could appreciate in that shot that you couldn't from the pan is that Good Magic really never put much of a charge into him. He always kind of had his measure and was going to, excuse me, to be able to fend him off. So it just goes to show you how well Justify ran. I do think, and I've seen some chatter in different places, some talk about Audible having run the second best race, maybe given some trouble that he had along the way. Let there be no doubt, Good Magic ran the second best race in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
But he was close to that pace as well, and really ran, you know, I think if you had said to Chad Brown, Good Magic's going to be close to a 45 and change half, he's going to be in the mix at the finish, and he's going to get a 102 buyer figure, he probably would have signed on the dotted line on that 10 out of 10 times. Assuming that what it would have taken to beat him would have been this, you know, really, really strong effort that we saw from a horse like Justify. Now, granted, they didn't come home all that quickly, but they sure did go very, very fast to the opening half mile. So I fully expect Justify to be extremely tough to beat next week, given that it looks like a relatively small field is coming together. I'm hopeful that Good Magic runs just for it to be a little bit of a test, and then probably 3 weeks after that, you and I will be talking on Friday morning about the possibility of another Triple Crown. So I was very, very impressed with the race he ran. Obviously a big fan of that horse, having seen him in person back when we were at Santa Anita in March, and just watching the development. In fact, I remember you texted me right after his debut, and I had actually looked at the Santa Anita races that day and seen the workout reports and whatnot, and so we knew that it could be something special, and certainly has turned out to be. But and it capped off a great couple of days of racing. I think we saw some really strong performances in basically every division. How about Monomoy Girl, who just seems to go out there and do her thing every time, takes on all comers, and was able to overcome a 14 post rather easily, you know, really without much of an issue whatsoever. So that was a very, very strong effort. Looking forward to seeing her in the Acorn. Yoshida came back off the layoff very, very strongly. My personal wagering highlight in terms of the contest was the Pat Day Mile, which I know people who are listening are thinking, how the hell did you hit the Pat Day Mile? You were on this show on Friday and said you really had no opinion, and I really didn't have much of an opinion. I made a good bet in taking turning back one-run horses and trying to just simply get them in the money, and two of those horses were Give Me a Minute and New York Central. I had no interest in Funny Duck. He just happened to be the one that was included in the all spot in the trifecta. So was able to do that. My problem was that I was very heavy on a Beach Patrol Justify double to try and get myself to around 30,000 plus any bets that I might hit in the Derby, and my bets in the Derby were all focused on getting somebody at a little bit of a price into the mix. I do think there's a world in which some of my long shots could have gotten in there. Hofberg had a really brutal trip, and maybe with a little bit of racing luck could have run third, but you can't take anything away from the horses that ran 1, 2, 3, and you have to appreciate the races that they ran. As far as the undercard goes, I mean, it was nice to see McCracken come back and win, and he's a horse that I think, if kept around one turn, could make some noise in races throughout the year. Good to see American Gal rebound. I know she's going to ultimately point to the Ballerina and the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Limousine Liberal seems to find a way to do his thing at Churchill every year, and Wet Track never hurts him, so it was nice to see him get the job done as well. And it was good to see Salty get a grade one. It was a very, very nice ride by Tyler Gaffalione, and took advantage of what was her ability to really run at a variety of distances, and I thought they made a good decision in sending her along and got a grade one that they probably wouldn't have gotten if she ran in the Humana Distaff, given the pace of that race and the quality of the race that American Gal ran. So even if the weather maybe dampened the spirits of some on Saturday, I didn't think it affected the racing too badly, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of these horses back. It looks at this point like we've seen just about every year, the Belmont card should be absolutely loaded, and we'll see a lot of these compete again, and hopefully a few more times throughout the year.
I just had Scully, and we went through a lot of the highlights, and I'll ask you on the, particularly on the turf races, because these are the ones that will produce, because particularly with the big fields. And Friday was one thing where Toinette and Will Call really telegraphed their performances with workouts. Toinette I was on, and I sort of misbet Will Call, kind of had him shuffled down with, you know, with the in the turf sprint. The turf sprints are squirrely. But on Saturday, Nick, and maybe it's because I'm just a little miffed with the two price horses that I really liked going into Saturday. They both ended up having similar down on the hedge trips where I don't think you wanted to be, given how much water the turf course had taken. And that was River Boyne in the American Turf and Madam Stripes when it came to the turf mile. And there's going to be horses that are going to be obscured coming out of all of all three of the turf races from Saturday because of the conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we were dealing with a different turf course on Saturday, obviously, than we were on Friday, with the amount of rain that came. And we've seen time and again that when that turf course takes moisture, the inside passer are very, very weak. And anybody who wants to dispute that point with me just needs to look at the PPs of Oscar Performance. And some of us that were trying to make that case were scoffed at throughout the year. In fact, I think you could actually also look at Beach Patrol a little bit too, who last year spent a little bit more time inside. And if you watch that particular race, as Yoshida sort of pushes Beach Patrol more towards the inside, that's when he really gains the upper hand. It was a brilliant ride by Irad Ortiz on Yoshida. Not only did he take the race to Beach Patrol first, but Beach Patrol also didn't ever really look like he was traveling all that well, and he still ran second, beaten three quarters of a length on class alone. So he's a horse I think that will move forward as the year goes on, just as he did last year, as we've seen many Chad Brown horses do. But I agree that you wanted to be inside yesterday, and I think that Flavian Pratt was trying to do something similar with River Boyne that he did on Friday with Toinette, where there was an advantage to being down towards the inside because of that fresh grass. But because she rode the hedge really the entire way after a poor break, and then ultimately got this big, internal pace setup where Irad moved Daddy is a Legend up to Rushing Fall in an effort to keep Rushing Fall from getting away, and then that opened the door for Toinette. So, yeah, it was a little unfortunate that those two things occurred, and I do think that horses generally that were towards the outside ran a bit better. Take a look at a horse like Dream Dancing, who I liked at kind of a wild price. She was probably never going to run fourth, beaten a slight photo for third if she had been on the hedge. So actually being 3 to 4 wide and not ever really having any cover probably helped her chances. So it's something that you want to keep your eye on, and anybody who you think may have been compromised by being down there, don't hesitate to bet them next time, especially if they end up running in a race like in a place like Belmont, where they take the hedge down, or they take the rail down for Belmont weekend, and we know that has just been a slipstream for a number of horses over the years, just staying inside and riding the hedge all the way, much like Hawksmoor did last year, and a number of horses throughout the time where the rails came down.
Well, we move past the Derby Oaks weekend. We look ahead toward Preakness, and meanwhile, in between, we've got some nice action at Belmont tomorrow. Nick, any thoughts, any opinions?
Couple of spots. I actually think there's an interesting non-stake in the mix too, and it's not a horse necessarily that I'm looking forward to betting because of his price, but I want to see how good American Guru is running in the fifth race. That'll close out the pick five. I think he'll take a lot of beating, given that he's 2 for 2 and one for fun at 4 to 5 last time. Now goes 7 furlongs. Doesn't look like a horse will struggle with that trip whatsoever. We get to see Patch come back, which is fun because everybody loves Patch. If everybody would just realize exactly what Patch is, that would be helpful a little bit as well. But you also have Mr. Buff. Oh, and that's Mr. Buff's a good reminder. Backyard Heaven probably had the performance of the weekend, especially the non-stake performance. So Mr. Buff was a horse that ran second to him, 2 back, and got that big buyer figure. Didn't come back and run quite as well, but it'll be nice to see if he can bounce back. As far as the stakes go, the Man of War is kind of an interesting bunch. I don't know really how much true talent there is in there. I do know that Sadler's Joy was compromised by being much too far back in the Pan American. Pace didn't really pan out. He sure would benefit if Scholar Athlete wants to push the pace and force this thing along a little bit, because he does need things to set up a little bit. I thought that Call Provision was probably somewhat compromised by being towards the inside of Keeneland. I don't think that High Happy is believable off of his last race, and I think that Wongo Algo will help the cause of a horse like Sadler's Joy as well. So while I'm not dying to take Sadler's Joy as the favorite, I think there's a lot to like there, and he's a horse that you could probably expect to run a big race now. Looking back at a trip and back on his preferred circuit at probably what is his best distance as well. So with Diamond King coming out of the Peter Pan, I think you're left with kind of a hodgepodge group. Just Whistle ran very, very well to break his maiden last time. He's going to need some pace in front of him, though, and so I think the hope there is that Core Beliefs ends up showing some speed. Having the inside post and having Tyler Bayes, I think you can kind of expect that. So if he does push things along a little bit, that'll help. I guess Transistor can show some speed from the outside, but it's really going to behoove Joel Rosario to keep Just Whistle in the game a little bit more early. He's run well in his last two starts, and he's run into some good horses, including Hofburg, so I'm interested to see if he can take that step forward into a stake race, because he did feel in a way like a horse that would really benefit from having a little bit of a test against deeper competition, because that was a pretty solid maiden field last time and he handled them well. So we'll see if he can take the leap forward that he would need maybe to get into a race like the Belmont.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice group, and no matter who wins here, and no matter who spins back toward Belmont, there's some quality horses in here that will make some noise second half of the year.
No question. I think there are. I think you'll get a starter or two for the Just a Game out of the Bogey. I'm sure that Chad Brown has 19 horses that he could nominate, and Flexibility being one of them, who's coming off a really nice win against a lesser field. So we'll see if she moves forward, and I imagine we could see her. Well, she's a Canadian bred, I guess, so she could go back to Canada. But that's a race that's yielded some good performances on Belmont Day in the past. And you also have the Run Happy with the venerable Green Grotto, who's trying to get his career kind of turned around. King Kranz has been really good since he went to Rudy. You've got Westwood coming back to New York. And Skylar Scramjet, who had kind of been anything up to the Carter when he faltered a little bit. And that was an odd betting period leading into the Carter, because Skylar Scramjet did not get any money. And so it was sort of a message that went out to everybody that he didn't really have much of a chance. So I'm going to see if he can bounce back. The rail is not ideal, obviously, but what this horse has done when he's been in the care of Michelle Nevin is, it's undeniable. He's other than a couple of sort of one-off bad performances, he's been pretty consistent, and I imagine you're going to see a pretty solid effort from him tomorrow.
Excellent. Well, are you going to California for the big TV taping?
I am. I'm going to California with the one and only Philly Joe, making his Santa Anita debut.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Big time. Big That'll time. Second be best place in the world to be watching the Preakness behind Baltimore.
No doubt. And we'll get a taste. When are you leaving? What's your schedule?
I get there Thursday night, so I can
so Friday's
I'll be ready
okay
for you Friday morning.
Perfect. Excellent. Nick Tamaro, everybody. He's a multiple. He's a multiple threat. You can put him up in the booth. How was the? We saw the video. We saw the cameo, where you give the high five. Another fun time with Travis up in the booth.
Oh, it was an absolute blast. Yeah, we had our friend Joe Doherty there from NYRA. He's the simulcasting manager. It was his first Derby, so he and I took in some of the sights while we could both days and walked around a little bit. But, yeah, it was a blast. I mean, it's amazing. You know, and I texted Travis on Monday when I was flying home. I had an unplanned stopover in Detroit Sunday night where I ended up getting stuck because I missed my connecting flight. So I texted him and I said, you know, 11 years ago, I walked up to your booth at Louisiana Downs and we watched Cody Meshwire, a field of $5,000 claimers, and now we watched the Derby four times, and it's kind of amazing that that still as a young guy, Travis has been able to do what he's done, and of course I'm appreciative of getting the second best seat in the entire place to watch the race, and to see him prepare for it and have to deal, of course, with weather this time around. And not only, I mean, he had the silks memorized 3 weeks ago, but to have to actually put that in play when they're on the track. I will admit that I always get a little nervous when they start loading in the gate, and I'm sure he does too, but you can get more info on that from him. But no, we had a great time, and it was well worth it. So next year will be his fifth, and no stopping it now.
Absolutely. Well, we had a fun visit with him ahead of time, and I think anybody that heard him when we talked to Travis could see how it played out. And if you haven't seen the video, I'll send another link to that of his call, and the way he does it. He explained, you know, the process and going back through the field, making sure that every horse gets a call, so everybody that is following a certain horse, you know, knows where they are, you know, as they hit the backstretch, and you know they set up shop for the long run on that end, and that gives you, you know, a feel, you know, for where you stand, and listeners, viewers appreciate that. And another great Derby run, another great call by Travis Stone. Nick, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you. I'll be in Baltimore. You'll be at Santa Anita, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Stay well.
Nick Tamaro, folks, bottom of the hour, 90 minutes in, 90 to come. We'll take a break here. We found Tom Quigley, and we will get Quigley in here, get his post-Derby thoughts, and he'll be able to celebrate all the good performances by the West Coast-based horses. West Coast bias. Right? Who do we have? Yeah, you had, beside the Derby win, you had Simon Callahan with American Gal, right? And Antoinette with Neil Drysdale. Very, very solid West Coast showing. Quigley's Corner. When we come back, and then, of course, Ed DeRosa, and talk to Hammer and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania-bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a Grade 1 winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF past performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
¡Listos!
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Golden brown, texture like sun, lays me down. Two distant lands, takes both my hands, never a frown.
We're back at the races, and there's been a great response, by the way, having heard the Dublin Racing Club ad. We've got a couple of dozen already that have joined in, and in fact, there's one of the filly. I'm going to check. I hope I didn't miss it. Now I completely forgot the filly running today at the Curra. And let's see if we're not too late. Pulling up the international. Why is it? There we go. International. And the fourth just went at the Curra. It's a huge field. I know that. It was. I looked at it the other day and then got kind of distracted. And yeah, I wish it went. It was the third. It was the third. And we'll have to get. It was a $36 winner, actually, but Decisive Action was the winner. But Usra, a Requinto filly, and this is a 2-year-old. It's early yet, and we'll keep an eye. She's okay. John's excited about her. But one of the Dublin Racing Club fillies, looks like we're up to four right now. So for a one flat fee, and take advantage of this now. And in fact, we've already got two members that are headed over to Ireland. I think next week, John's going to visit. He's headed over. I think late next week he's leaving, and I'm going to get him on before he leaves. Probably Tuesday, we'll check in with John before he goes over, and give you an update on the group of horses. But you discounts on travel and on everything you want to do on the Emerald Isle and golf and pub crawls. And if you haven't visited the website, do so, DublinRacingClub.com. And there's nice, Bill Barish, of course, is one of the hosts when you go over. And Bill and John have been writing regularly on the website, on the blog section. So great way to get involved, international racing, and looking forward myself to getting over. I've never been to Ireland. So it's on the agenda. If it's on yours, take advantage. Let me take advantage of Tom Quigley, Quigley's Corner, and we feel badly. We didn't get a chance to talk to Tom last week because he gave out the straight superfecta. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And it's funny you're talking about the racing club. Mr. Parada was speaking with me yesterday about the club. He said there's currently no Quigleys in the club. And, of course, being very very much of an Irish heritage background, perhaps I might get involved with the club as well.
Absolutely. It's only appropriate that a Quigley. We need a few Quigleys. We get the whole Quigley clan.
It sounds like a lot of fun. John was telling me about it, and like you, I've never been to Ireland. I'm embarrassed to admit that, and so I kind of killed two birds with one stone. But it sounds like an awesome time, and certainly, you know, anytime you visit a racetrack, I've always said I've never met a racetrack I didn't like and didn't enjoy visiting, and so would love to expand my horizons internationally.
Well, we look forward to it, and we look forward to checking in with you. We'll talk about Santa Anita in a minute, but let's get some post-Derby Oaks weekend conversation. Certainly the invasion of the West Coast connections, largely successful. And even Midnight Bisou running third in the Oaks. She was left with a little too much to do, but nothing wrong with a board hit in that race. Your thoughts about what we saw, Derby and the rest?
Yeah, no doubt Bisou did have a rough trip. Go back and watch the replay if you don't recall watching her specifically. But, you know, it's a legitimate excuse, and I'm sure there's some runners in the Derby, some connections who think that they have legitimate excuses, whether it might be trip or the muddy surface. But, you know, I'm the biggest West Coast homer around, and I actually, my top selection was Good Magic. And at the top of the stretch, I would have tripled my bet. I thought he was going to go right on by Justify, given the lack of seasoning and all the other ingredients that we know about. And lo and behold, Justified showed another gear and just drew off and could not have been more impressive, and obviously very proud of what he accomplished. And, you know, anytime you get a good horse in Mr. Baffert's hands, it's going to be, you know, very exciting to see what he can do. And we saw that, of course, probably many people have seen the future book wager that was made by One Sharp Horse Player at the Wynn, where he got 300-1 odds on Justify before he started. And that's an important note. Everybody looks back on that bet and says, wow, what an amazing wager that was. And the person collected $150,000. But keep in mind, the horse hadn't started. The horse had to basically have everything go right in order to get to the starting gate and then had to perform. So hats off to all the connections, whether you're completely connected to the horse or peripherally connected by having a winning wager on the horse. But Good Magic lost nothing in defeat. I think he showed a bit of his class as well. But Justify, obviously, on the first Saturday in May, was in a different league.
Well, we now turn our attention derby-wise. We'll touch on some other spots. But your thoughts going forward for next week?
Well, you know, the field looks relatively small, and it's interesting. I think they're all kind of trying to see whether there's any, you know, truth to these rumors about Justify being lame. Of course, social media blew up, and the stable notes from Santa Anita blew up yesterday, and it seems to be a hot topic. But, you know, a couple of relatively sharp horsemen, Chad Brown and Mick Ruiz, suddenly seem to be on the fence whether they're going to run both Dioro and or Good Magic in the Preakness. Immediately after the race, they both were pretty clear that they were not. And so it'd be interesting to see if one or both of those come back into the Preakness. It would obviously make for an exciting race, in my opinion. If they don't, looks like a relatively short field. Perhaps Mr. Lucas is going to enter a rabbit to soften up Justify a little bit. We'll see how that plays out. But Justify right now, according to the Wynn Casino in Las Vegas, is odds of 1-2 to win the Kentucky, to win the Preakness. And I think those are what the off odds will be as well, if in fact the field stays the way we think of it is right now. But like they say, stay tuned, because a lot of things could develop over the next 8 days, particularly if Bolt and Good Magic both enter the race.
Well, it does look like Bolt is a go from everything we can see and they're hearing. And that a little bit of a departure after, as you mentioned, it seemed that Ruiz had one idea in mind, Tom, to come home and you know, let some of the air out of the balloon and then point for the Pacific Classic. But, you know, the saying is, you know, run them when they're right. And I have said, and I think we've collectively, observers have kind of mitigated Bolt Oro's effort by saying this was not the right approach for him. I mean, the people that liked Bolt Oro going into Derby all thought that coming out of Santa Anita Derby and the way that race was run, he was really compromised by having to try to stay in contact with a loose and easy leader in Justify, and this was going to be his chance to settle a little bit more and come with a stalk and go run. And instead, he it's almost as if they didn't learn any lessons in the Santa Anita Derby, and he tried to stay in proximity, and that's not his best. That's not his best scenario.
Yeah, I think most good horsemen will say, listen to what the horse tells you. And I think there was a lot of disappointment after the race from a lot of the connections. And I think once they kind of regrouped and kind of saw how the horses came out of the race, and again, specifically referring to both Bolt and Good Magic, I think the horsemen, Mick Ruiz and Chad Brown, said, you know what? These horses might not have been as tired as I first thought. Perhaps the race didn't take as much out of them as we thought. Who knows what the thought process was, but it's good to see that they're actually having a second thought. Sometimes when you change course, as you said, that doesn't always turn out to be the best. Initially, Mick thought he might come back here, maybe run in the Haskell, but the long-term goal was the Pacific Classic. But, you know, you only get one chance to run in the Preakness, and so I'm sure they've got a little bit of Preakness fever as well, and they'd like redemption. Justify, obviously, way out in front now in terms of the head-to-head count. But nevertheless, like I said, if both run, then it should make for a much, much more exciting Preakness.
Well, some other thoughts. Neil Drysdale with a couple of major chances, and Toinette is going to come out of that Edgewood as clearly one of the top three-year-old fillies on the grass this year.
And good to see Flavian get a couple of wins at Churchill as well. Obviously, he's a world-class trainer. A world-class rider. He doesn't go out of town very much. Obviously, he stays close to home. He's got a lot of business here whenever he goes out of town. Him and Derek Lawson, his agent, lose business, and so they like to stay close to Southern California. But he is a world-class rider. I like to see him prove that more and more around the country. Perhaps he'll have more opportunity in some of the summer stakes races, not just the Triple Crown, but, you know, races like the Met Mile, the Arlington Million, whatever they might be. But Flavien, very, very talented rider, and good to see him hit the winner's circle under the Twin Spires.
Well, and we also, who else did we talk to? And Simon Callahan with the big effort from American Gal, and feels like she's going to be a major player heading ultimately back to Churchill for the Filly and Mare Sprint.
And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're talking about Midnight Bisou, and I think one of the weaknesses on the Southern California racing calendar, and this really falls on the lap of Del Mar, is there's not very good stakes races either for the three-year-old colts or the three-year-old fillies. We see it time and time again. Most of our talented three-year-olds ship back east, whether it's to run in the Haskell or the King's Bishop or the Test or all those other races that NYRA and many other racing jurisdictions have for talented three-year-olds. It's disappointing to see because we see them for the first half of the year here in Southern California and they kind of disappear off the radar. And it's happened year after year. Really would like to see an improvement in that stake schedule, again, primarily down at Del Mar more so than Santa Anita because they have those key summer racing months. And perhaps that will happen, but it's been a big void in the calendar here in Southern California. We lose a lot of our stars because of it.
Well, let's talk about some of the activity while everybody was focused at Churchill. You had plenty of racing of your own, including Simon Callahan winning the Senorita, treasuring, and a personal favorite, a horse that at the races listeners, I think, jumped aboard based on Doug O'Neill's lauding of the horse. Blame the Rider. Winning that Singletary and feels like a horse that really has started to connect the dots.
Well, Blame the Rider has connected the dots once he stepped on the turf course. He's now 2-for-2 over the turf. And as you indicated in a previous show a few weeks ago, Doug O'Neill certainly touted to you the ability of that horse. We needed a surface change in order to actually see it, but he is a rapidly improving star. And Treasuring was one of two in the Senorita for Simon Callahan. I actually like Treasuring. 7-2 on John White's Morning Line, paid a ridiculous $14. She had a hint of ability. She was running against the boys overseas before she came to the United States, and she got more involved in the race early. Brice Blanc gave her what I thought was a very, very good ride, and so Callahan with multiple victories, both at Churchill Downs and, of course, at the Great Race Place.
You also, on Sunday, haven't even mentioned this race yet in all the hubbub of post-Derby, but Default with a 3-5 win for Phil D'Amato. That came in the Adoration on Sunday.
What a neat filly she is. She's 4 years old, and unlike Blame the Rider, she does not need to carry her surface with her. She's a multiple graded stakes winner now, both on turf and dirt, and she had that nice light kick in the Adoration. It's kind of a step down in class for her, which is why she went off at 3-5. Vale Dory, obviously the disappointment in the race finishing off the board. But Fault, a very shrewd purchase by the Agave Racing Stable. Mark Martinez does an excellent job. His go-to trainer in Southern California is Phil D'Amato. They make somewhat of a perfect team because Mark's a very sharp guy. Phil needs no introduction. He's a very sharp trainer as well. And so Fault, it'll be interesting to see which races she points to as we move into the summer months.
You know, Baffert, of course, was with us on Monday, and we spent the better part of half hour recapping Derby and everything that comes with it, and historic in terms of context for the history of the sport. But there was a performance of a Baffert winner, and in fact, somebody asked me just now, I saw earlier on Twitter, someone asked about Amata Rafaela, and that win on Saturday, early on that card, kind of has gone, I think, unnoticed, but a 96 buyer for the Distorted Humor Filly, and she's going to obviously be something to reckon with as the calendar rolls forward.
She ran in race 3 on our Saturday card, so like you said, it was kind of lost in the shuffle with all the Derby hoopla, but she was extremely impressive. She stopped the timer in 109 and change. In her debut, she was never even asked to really pick up her feet. She immediately made Jeff Siegel's horses to watch list. If you watch him on the Black Book Express, which you can find on Twitter and other internet vehicles as well, you'll see her replay there or go back and look at her replay at any other replay site you have. She was very impressive. She is going to be, I believe, a force to deal with in that three-year-old filly division we were talking about, perhaps maybe even getting to the test at Saratoga in August.
Well, that the obvious target for three-year-old fillies, and you know, this is a horse we had some interest in. Three Chimneys bred the filly, the first-time starter, but Dustin Diamonds, the dam, a vindication mare that a long-time product for Padua, for Satish Sanan and his operation, and she's a nice mare, and this is. This is instantly a filly to watch, and when I saw Dustin Diamonds, I had a little interest, and I'm glad we had a moment to talk about it. Let's look ahead to the weekend, and you know, we've kind of a intermediate kind of weekend at Santa Anita. Some highlights, Tom, as we look to today, tomorrow, and Sunday.
Yeah, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. And like you said, good races, 8 race card today, 9 race cards Saturday and Sunday. And starting today in the second race, you know, we started the 2-year-old racing here in Southern California. Race number 2 today is one of those races for 2-year-olds going 4.5 furlongs on the main track. There's a field of 8. And what's interesting here, Steve, is 5 of the 8 are fillies running against the boys. They're all first-time starters, a lot of well-bred runners, a few runners in here who cost a pretty penny at the auction. And so obviously, as you well know, besides looking at the breeding, take a look at them on track, take a look at the various workout reports that are available, because this type of race just oozes on the surface that it could be a key race with a lot of talented runners coming out of it. And there's another good race later on today's card, which is for the 3-year-olds. It goes as race number 7. And in that particular race, we've got a number of good runners as well, including Longden. Your listeners might not know that Longden from the Baffert Barn was kind of the workmate for Justify in his workout preparations leading up to the Kentucky Derby. Longden has a hint of ability, finally broke his maiden last time. But there's other talented 3-year-old runners in here, some of whom we've talked about before, including Peace and Take the 101. So an excellent Friday card out at the Great Race Place. And now that the Gulfstream Park Rainbow Pick 6 has been hit, we've got the biggest jackpot carryover in the country. And that's now up to $297,000. Unlike the one at Gulfstream where you need to string together a couple of 50-to-1 shots, ours is different in that you only need to be the only winning ticket. You might need a few prices along the way, but you don't need crazy knockout horses in almost every sequence. So that's starting to build up and gather some excitement as well.
Talk about the weekend.
The weekend, Saturday, we've got the Laz Barrera. And, you know, before we even talk about the runners in the race, just a you know, a quick thought about Laz Barrera and his importance to not only Southern California, but obviously the American racing scene as well. A firm comes to mind, Lafitte Pinkai. Sometimes Lafitte actually makes the presentation, the trophy presentation for this race. That goes as race number 5 tomorrow, the Grade 3 Laz Barrera. Field of 7, and a number of other runners in here that we've talked about, a couple from the Baffert Barn, McHale, and Zupakar, I believe is how it's pronounced. I'll leave that pronunciation up to you and Michael Rona. And then Kansaka down on the rail. We know that he likes this distance, which is 7 furlongs. He's 2 for 2 at this distance. Another good 9 race card. And Hammer, what he's been doing lately is the late pick 4 and the late pick 5 have the most deep and contentious races. And we can see that both in the pool sizes and the payouts because it's making for some challenging handicapping.
How about the Angel Flight and one of our kind of personal favorites in there, Show It and Mow It for Sherlock.
And right next door, Moonshine Memories. You might recall her. She was very talented, graded stakes winner down at Del Mar. They're drawn right next to each other, down inside. Show It and Mow It has the rail post, Moonshine Memories, right next door in post number 2, a field of 10. Supplemental nomination in there is Moonshine Memories for the Callahan Barn. But, you know, you look through the trainer roster, 2 for Baffert, 1 for Miller, 1 for Erton, 2 for Sadler. You know the field is loaded, and that goes as race number 8. A good Saturday card, like you said. A good bridge day, right? In other words, it's not going to get the excitement and the pulse pumping like the Derby or the Preakness cards do, but a good Saturday card out at Santa Anita.
Absolutely. And, Tom, appreciate it. Big doings next week, of course. We talked to Pete Fornatale on Wednesday, and you've got all the players coming as Pete and Jonathan's project comes to a head. You should have a lot of fun. We'll be looking forward to you know, some of the updates and everything next weekend out there?
The response has been overwhelming, and it should be, because it's an extremely well-formatted tournament. It's expensive. It's not for everybody. It costs $5,000. It's a live bankroll tournament. Whatever you make is yours to keep. But there is no entry fee. There's nothing at all that the players have to put up. You just got to bring $5,000 cash to play in, and you know, whatever you make is all yours to keep. And like I said, the response from most of the well-known tournament players from around the country has been outstanding. So when you look at the names on the leaderboard next Saturday and Sunday, you're going to recognize a lot of the top names from around the country.
Absolutely. And we hope it goes well and gets picked up and gets a chance to spread the word about the contest play and about the game in general. Tom, we'll touch base next week. I'll be in Baltimore, and we'll get your thoughts about what's ahead and justifies next try as we move down the Triple Crown Trail.
Enjoy the crab cake, Steve. Have a great weekend.
Tom Quigley, everybody. Quigley's Corner on Twitter. And, of course, Tom with the daily preview of the action at Santa Anita and contributing as well to the simulcast feed. Let's take a break. Coming up on the top of the hour, we've got a visit coming up with Ed DeRosa. We'll talk to Ed and get his post-Derby thoughts. Rick Hammerly to follow. See what Rick thought. And gets a chance to Rick's gonna take a victory lap. Let's be honest. The Wonder Horse, Rick. He termed the Justify moniker, the Wonder Horse. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by 5.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vaughn, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Porschebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porschebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porschebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porschebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.